Welcome to Bookish Podcast with Kath and Al, a podcast about books-ish. A quick disclaimer before we start, there may be some spoilers, so please save the episode for later if you don't want any. And also, please follow us on social at We Are Bookish Pod. We hope you enjoy.
Lift off!
Hello.
Hi. Hey, girl. Hey.
Hello. How are you?
I am very well, thank you.
Good.
I don't know what to say. I'm at home.
She's chilling. I'm a bit of a zombie today, guys. I had a really stressful day at work. Not stressful, just manic day at work. Just, you know, when stuff just all happens at once and you're like, okay, yeah, this is fine. You know the meme of the guy sat in the fire, like, this is fine. That was me today at work. So I'm a bit like, my brain's a bit mushy, but we're all good. It wasn't bad, you know, we're all good. But I was like, do you want to postpone? And I was like, no, we're on a roll. You've heard from us every 2 weeks for the last, hold on. I don't want to jinx this, actually.
So I'm not going to.
Yeah. Like, well, we don't want to jinx it. Yeah, it's like girl math, maybe.
Girl math.
I love girl math because it's me. It is literally me. I can't even. And you know the like counter trend is that thing of boy math, and it's like this guy just does these really funny things out about boy math, and it'll be stuff like really, really stupid stuff. And it's really funny. I should have thought of an example, but TikTok trends, hey.
Oh, that TikTok trend where you ask your boyfriend how often does he think about the Roman Empire?
Guys,
did you do that? Please tell me you did that with Tom. And does he? And where did this come from?
So at his birthday, it was Tom's birthday the other day, and I said, guys, I wrote a really good tweet, because this came up and I was like, guys, I actually wrote an epic tweet the other day. And Caroline was like, I've got it here. And she read it out. And I said something like, the Roman Empire thing, though, because every time my boyfriend sees a really straight road, he's like, that's a Roman road. And I read it out and they're all laughing because he does do that. Like, he is literally like, and then he was like, I just grew up around a lot of Roman roads. And I was like, I have never, ever in my life thought about who built the road until I met you. And now, every time the road's really straight, I'm like, I wonder if this was a Roman road. And I'm like, no, it's a boy thing. Sorry to gender, but like.
Really just, okay, I would be lying if I said I didn't think about the road, or I haven't thought about things being a Roman road. That sounds really weird, but I've never really thought, like, it's definitely a boy thing, and I don't understand why you would think about, like, casually just think about the Roman Empire. No. Like, one of the guys was like every day, and I'm like, really? Like, where's this come from?
In what context? Like, how did your brain get there? Like, I don't understand. Ooh, sorry, that's my chair, guys. I need to put some WD-40. Is that what it is? Whatever the oil thing is.
I honestly, WD-40 is the like wild. It can do everything.
I know.
That should be.
I don't actually have any, but I tell you who does have some. My boyfriend.
He likes to think about the Roman Empire.
I'm sure that like the Romans invented WD-40 or something stupid like that.
Yeah, I bet you. I bet you. Okay, guys, no, we're going to go back. We're going to research this. If we can find a way that it relates to the Roman Empire,
probably
we'll
does.
Keep you updated. Because I'm pretty sure it does.
I'm sure it does, yeah. Hilarious.
What a wild trend, really.
But he wouldn't mind me saying that because he does love a Roman road. And he was like, that doesn't mean I think about the Roman Empire. And I was like, yes, it does.
Yes, it does.
Even like the other day, we were looking at a map of London and we were looking at something in East London that we were going to. And I like zoomed out the map and he went, oh, that's a very straight road. That must be a Roman road. And I'm like, we're not talking about roads. We're literally getting on the tube. Like, we don't. Bless him.
Well, that's a living, talking example.
Well, he won't be the only one. I was like, it just means you're like all the other men.
It's just, how do you think? No, I don't know, like every other week. Why?
Although my favourite thing about it is girls being like, this is my Roman Empire. And it'd be like, Gilmore Girls. Or like.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I saw one and they took a picture of the Jersey Shore cast and I was like, yeah, that's my Roman Empire.
Yeah. I think mine's probably like Schitt's Creek, to be honest. Speaking of, Dan Levy, is that his name?
Yes.
He is a professor in the new series of Sex Education.
He is. Have you been watching it?
Yeah, I've watched a bit. It's not amazing, I don't think.
Yeah. This series. Everyone's up in arms with Netflix at the moment because they're raising their prices of their subscription, the subscriptions. I don't know if it's the free subscriptions or everyone's subscriptions generally. I was watching a trailer for their newest, now that Sex Education is done, they're dropping a new teen drama series. And everyone's literally in the comments like, fuck you, Netflix, you've upped the subscription price, stuff like that. It's wild. All that for crap endings to Sex Education, which I heard actually wasn't like that great.
Yeah. Well, I've only watched a couple of episodes, but I don't know. But talking of subscriptions, Spotify.
Oh, yeah, guys. You know what you can do now on Spotify if you're a premium user? You can get 15 hours of free books a month. Is it a month? Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. No, I think it's a month. Yeah.
Good, too fucking right. That's like, that's basically like a book and a half, maybe two books.
Yeah. Well,
it's probably about two books.
Well, it depends, doesn't it? And actually, I don't really get through more than that anyway. No. So, see you later, Audible. Bye.
Yeah, I ain't gonna lie. Like, I do need to. I've got like four credits in my Audible that I need to use and then cancel. Sorry, Audible. Or unless you want to sponsor us, Audible, then.
Yeah, well, that's also fine. Then we will use you. We have used you loyally for a while.
We have, to be fair. You helped me get through sticky situations a lot.
Like today.
Like today, yes, like today. I had to audiobook the last part of this book, which was very good.
Yes, well, Audible was your friend because I texted Ellie earlier and I was like, have you finished the book? And she was like,
no. I'm still audiobooking it. But it actually was a really nice book to audio book.
Yeah.
Yes, it was a nice audio book. There's something about, and I was saying to Kath, I found this book very moving. And sort of rhythmic in a I didn't tell you that. I found it sort of like it had like a cadence, I don't know. I felt like I could follow the book quite well. I don't really know what I'm saying, but
It was rhythmic, wasn't it? It was quite like poetic and
maybe that's the word. Yeah, I feel like it was quite poetic. That's probably the word I'm looking for. And therefore it carries like into the audiobook. It was quite easy to listen to because you sort of get fall into the emotion of the book. It translates very well, is what I'm trying to say.
I can see that.
Where's my book? Oh, it's here.
What would you give it then? Out of five?
Five? Yeah.
I gave it five, I think.
Quite easily.
Yeah.
We are talking about The Book of Fire by Christine Terry, if you didn't know. Hello, hi guys, this is the book we are talking about today. So the book we're talking about today is The Book of Fire by Christie Lefteri, and we were kindly gifted this book by Beth at Bonnier Book, so thank you for the 10 out of 10 5 out of 5 star plus read. We really really enjoyed it. We did create like reel about it a little while ago, say that, and I've just finished it now, but everything I did say in that reel does stand. Like absolutely does stand.
It's also really new, like it's only got like 400 reviews on Goodreads at the moment, so I saw it in the supermarket actually. I was like, oh,
did you?
But yeah, it's definitely, I mean, we did read the hardback, guys. So we don't do that for everyone.
That's half the reason I was dragging my feet about it. Not because it wasn't a great book. It's because it's a hardback. And that's my personal problem, not anyone else's.
You know, I'm reading two hardbacks at the moment.
Oh, I feel for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll get on to that later on once we've spoken about this book. But do you want to read the blurb?
I can do. Sorry, guys, if I really fuck this up. Once upon a time, there was a beautiful village that held a million stories of love and loss and peace and war. And it was swallowed up by a fire that blazed up to the sky. The fire ran all the way down to the sea where it met with its reflection. A family from two nations, England and Greece, live a simple life in a tiny Greek village. Irene and Tasso and their daughter Hara, whose name means joy. Their life goes up in flames in a single day when one man starts a fire out of greed and indifference. Many are killed, homes are destroyed, and the region's natural beauty wiped out. In the wake of the fire, Hara bears deep scars across her back and arms. Tasso is frozen in trauma, devastated that he wasn't there when his family most needed him. And Irene is crippled by guilt at her part in the fate of the man who started the fire. But this family has survived, and slowly green shoots of hope and renewal will grow from the smouldering ruins of devastation.
There you go.
There you go.
I think the book starts in a really powerful way, like the way she finds the man that started the fire. And you're like, ooh. But then when I first started reading it, I was like, well, we already know that she left him there. So like, what else? And he's dead. So like, what else is there? And we know he started the fire. Do you know what I mean? So it's quite interesting that they gave us all that information up front.
I liked it. You know what it reminded me of? And it's just because we've just recorded that episode that you'll get to. We've just spoken about that episode, actually. You would already have listened to it. When it's like his only wife, and it literally sets the scene in like a single sentence. And so I really am enjoying that because it pays off.
Yeah, that's true. Because it really grabs you in and you're like, ooh, okay, what's going on here? But like basically she leaves, she basically, okay, so there's a fire and then she, the main character, the narrator, she finds, like, comes, stumbles across the guy that started the fire, like, dying, basically, and she just leaves him there, which, brutal. And then she, like, grapples with the morality of that, and then she, like, goes back to him, and then he's dead. So she's grappling with that amongst everything else that's happened to her, which is pretty rough. I think she's been through a lot, and then she has to go through that as well. There's a book about morality, isn't it? Like,
it really is, yeah.
Like, where's the line? Like, should she have left him? Should she have told someone? What should she have done? Like, and I think that is, like, that's one of the main things I took from the book is, like, the morals of any one situation are not necessarily clear-cut. And, you know, should he be punished for what he did? Yes, but should he have died? Probably not. Like, depends what you believe in. But it's, like, that. Sort of, but then she didn't kill him, so it's not like she went out to kill him. So it's like this whole, like, these questions that she's asking herself, and therefore you are asking of her all the way through the book.
It's a bit like when we did another book, another episode, Heatwave, where he sees the boy die and he doesn't do anything, and then you follow him throughout the day, right? Should he have gone back? Should he have helped him?
Oh my God, I thought you were talking about the other book, Heatwave. And I was like, when did that happen? And then I realised what you were talking about. And I was
the Victor Justin one. Oh my God, we've done two books about heatwaves, guys. We're talking about the novella by Victor Justin.
By the time you finished the sentence, I was with you. But when you started, I was like, what? Ellie's got a good memory. I don't remember that happening in that book. you're right. It's quite similar in that sense of, like, he didn't kill the kid, but he didn't do anything about it. And then he buried the whole.
So you're really, like, you're guilty by, is it not by association, but you're an accomplice because you didn't do anything. And well, then the question is, should you do something, right?
Yeah. Like, and technically, she withheld information from the police. She lied to the police. So she is, like, at fault in the law in that sense. But then it happens to be the police officer in the end that's like, you know what, like, just leave it.
Yeah, because they...
Which is an interesting thing,
yeah. It's, I mean, but she, the thing is, it's not like he was dead and she came across, like, he was alive when she came across him. So the opportunity was there to do something, regardless of whether he could have survived or would have survived.
You would have never known.
Should she have done something, right? Given everything that he's done. Like,
although I think the police officer does say at the end, right, that there's probably, like, she probably wouldn't have saved him.
No. But then she wouldn't be grappling with her conscience the whole entire way afterwards. Because I,
God, you'd feel really guilty, wouldn't you?
You would feel really guilty. I feel for her because I think there's been plenty of times on this podcast where I've been like, "Fuck the Tories! I wouldn't spit on them if they're on fire." Blah blah blah. but that would be my equivalent in this situation, right? If I was to look at the likes of, I can't even say their names. And then I thought, okay, if I was in that situation and I saw them and they needed help, would I just leave them or would I do something about it? And I would like to think that even if I thought that they didn't deserve it, that I would actually just do something about it, because you know what? I'm humanity. Because even though they possess no humanity, I do. And I would want someone to do unto me as I would do unto them.
Yeah.
And like, you know, the universe will take care of them eventually in the way that they are supposed to go. Everything is supposed to happen the way it's supposed to happen. But it's not to go through life then hating yourself for something you might not have. Yeah. Is it, you know? It makes you question, like, what you would do. Like, where's your morality? Yeah, where's your humanity?
And I'm with you. Like, I'd like to think that I would help anyone, regardless of who they were, what they believed in, and what they've done.
Yeah.
But, you know, hopefully I'll never be faced with that situation.
Yeah.
Like, and also, I think what's interesting in that situation, I think if you were in, like, a more, like, fight or flight situation, you'd probably go into, like, survival mode and you probably would help someone. Well, as if, like, because the way she stumbled across him was quite like everything was dead around him. Do you know what I mean? Like, you just imagine like the whole forest is completely dead and it's a really eerie and quiet.
Yeah.
And then she, like, I don't know, it's just harrowing.
They're all traumatized as well. I mean, we're saying this like we've gone through exactly what they've gone through. Like, you learn about, and we'll talk about the structure of the book in a minute, but I really loved the way in which we're told how she tells the story of the fire, and you see the repercussions and how it's affected everyone on this island. And so, like, when she comes across him, she's really fighting, like, this man, she's like, I should help him. And then she's like, fuck this man. He's ruined everything. Like, so, why should I help him? Yeah.
And she's got all these people, like, she basically, like, half the village died essentially, and like the other half were like injured at least. And she, like, her daughter's like got a massive like scar on her back that's healing, and her husband is a painter and he can't use his hands because his hands are completely burnt, and like he's really, really, really depressed. And her daughter's like, obviously she's like 7 or something, and she's like been through like more trauma than most people will experience in their entire life.
Yeah,
it's just awful. And you know, and like the thing is about this book is like we're reading it at a time where the whole summer has been news about wildfires.
Yeah.
And like you're just thinking, God.
But even just the wildfires, you know, the earthquake in Morocco and stuff like that. Like, what I really liked is that I think she had a way, you know, we hear these things and then we quickly forget about them because it's not something that's directly affecting us in our lives. But actually there are people behind these stories. There are people that are going through this that are having to pick their lives up from the ground and rebuild. Yeah. And I felt like she did a really good job of humanizing or making it feel a bit more, feel tangible as a thing that actually we shouldn't forget.
She does people, that really well, I think. She does it with The Beekeeper of Aleppo as well. I haven't read the Songbirds one, but I've read The Beekeeper of Aleppo, and she's really like, the way she tells the story and captures that emotion is really powerful. And it's, I almost feel like shoving it in everyone's face and like, read this, you know, to like add some emotion behind some of the headlines and stuff. Because also something that I found really really, really interesting and like really powerful in this book is the way she talks about wildfires, because
yes,
I actually really comes it, not to talk about Tom again, not to become one of those girls that's like talking about the boyfriend all the time, but we're having a conversation about like wildfires and stuff, and he was saying that he'd seen like someone, one of his friends had seen a conspiracy video about like wildfires and how people are like setting them alight on purpose and it's not actually climate change and stuff, like bullshit stuff, yeah, like that. And we were talking, and I was talking to him about it and in the book, and he was like, it's really interesting because in the book it basically counteracts any of those conspiracy theories really well without actually addressing them. It's saying like, to have a to have these wildfires, you need three things. You need like the ignition, which in this instance is the like rich guy trying to build the hotel. You need the right conditions, and you mm-hmm. need something else. I can't remember what the other thing was. Oh, fuel, I think it is.
Yeah.
Which is the forest. Unfortunately, because of climate change, the right is always the right conditions.
Yeah.
Well, as before, it was like only the right conditions on like certain days of the year, like certain years or whatever. Now it's like the right conditions for like months at a time. So you can't do the same like controlled fires that you used to be able to do, because it could just cause mass destruction like this one. And the way that she talked about that in the book, I thought was really, I haven't obviously described it well enough because the way she writes about it is like amazing, but I just think that's really interesting and one of the main reasons why I'd recommend this book to anyone, to like sort of understand that's what's happening. It's not just that there's like the fires don't come from nowhere, but the fact that now that the right conditions are the right conditions all the time,
yeah,
we are gonna just see more and more and more of this.
Yeah, and then people go, there's more opportunity to take advantage of those right conditions.
Exactly.
Like that man did in this instance, yeah.
Because basically the guy who started the fire, he was meant to do a controlled fire to clear an area of the forest to clear for a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just spread. That's basically what happened, which obviously you're like, well, he didn't mean to do it. But like he knew, like he's not an idiot. He knows that he can get out of hand. And it did.
Yeah. And then the reason to do the controlled fire is to... because he, for whatever reason, he may not have got the planning permission to put the hotel there. So therefore, people do things that they're not supposed to do to be like, well, the space is available now.
Mm.
So, it's sad because also everyone on this island is so connected to the island.
Okay.
Right. We read The Island of Missing Trees and we did an episode on it. And what I really liked was that in the same way that this is really connected, everyone in the island is really connected to the island and nature, there's some parallels with that as well.
Mm.
With the Island of Missing Trees, everyone is still is so connected with the space and the island around them.
Mm-hmm.
And we learn about the fig tree and how the fig tree made it to London. And again, different book. We're not so focused on the war, the Turkish Cypriot war, in the Book of Fire, but also there's elements of going back to London and drawing like parallels and stuff. And I like that connectedness that these books had. Maybe it's us city dwellers that aren't really connected to nature as such as if you lived in the countryside or on an island. Do you know what I mean?
I definitely... I read this memoir once about, it's called Rebounding, and it was by a woman called Alice Vincent, and she basically went for a breakup, and then it's about her breakup and how she like finds like calm and like everything in like houseplants basically, and she just starts growing loads of houseplants, and she basically gets really connected to plants and nature in London, and she like grows like plants on any windowsill, any flat chair she's in and stuff like that. And like I just think it's really interesting because I'm like absolutely obsessed with like my plants at the moment, and I just think it is interesting how like sometimes you're just so desperate to like have a bit of nature around you, and how that can make you feel. And like I also read another book about running once, and it basically said that even just getting in like forest running is like the best thing you can do for your mental health, and dappled light is like apparently amazing for you, so just being out in nature is so good for you.
Yeah. people, I feel like I found this in Australia as well. Like people are so much more connected to their surroundings because it's a different appreciation, isn't it, in comparison to maybe like this sort of fast Western society that we're sort of like used to being.
I know what you mean. And even the little kid, she sort of nurses that. What animal is it?
Oh,
is it a jackal?
The jackal, yeah, because they talk about jackals a lot.
And they're playing, and then she sees a jackal. Yeah, so basically the girl finds a burnt jackal and she looks at, she nurses it back to health, and it's that is so heartbreaking and so cute. I love that bit.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorite bits. But the little girl is so amazing. She's incredible.
She's got incredible strength of will.
It's incredible.
Given everything she's sort of had to go through at such a young age.
So true.
And she's got great understanding as well. Yeah, continue friendship.
Yeah. Just saying, like, the little girl makes friends with that little boy, and then you see all the mother's friendships and how she protects her friends and how friends like pull her through as well. I just think it's about family, community, friendship, like building that community, because the community's gone basically, but it's still there. And they talk about like the cafe and how it used to be and how it is now, but it's still like a source of comfort for them all because they still go like every day.
There's a section in the book where she's like, she's in the cafe and she looks at the people around her and she sees the garage man and she sees somebody else, and then she goes, but this person should be here and this person should be here. And she sat across from her friend Mrs. Gatakis, I think her name is, and she's lost her husband, and every day she reminds like her, like, well, at least your husband's still here, kind of thing, because she's lost hers. But then she's very much like, but my husband's not here, like, he's here but he's not here in spirit, you know. He's deeply depressed because he feels like he should have done more.
It's so hard. And you can see her grappling with, like, I'm so annoyed at him for not being there for my daughter, not being there for me, but also, like, so worried about him.
Yeah.
And that is, like, that I think she captures that really well of, like, the conflict in her brain about how she feels about the fact that he's just sits there all day staring at the tree. And, like, he doesn't talk to his daughter and stuff, and she's like, yeah.
Because he promises the daughter he'll play with her, and then he doesn't.
Because he can't.
Yeah. And she's like, but I said I would do all of the playing. She says that.
No, stocks. I'm actually going to cry. This book made me cry like 10 times, by the way. And I finished it on holiday, and I was just, like, sobbing. I was just sat there, like, just crying my eyes out. I was like, oh, my God.
It's really moving, because I think, and we had a good conversation with our friend Tara at Book Brunch Club, and she was talking about reading A Little Life, and
spoiler, she doesn't like it.
Safe to say, yeah. I mean, you can go on her for good reason. You'll get her review, and if you follow like her book account, then you'll see. But when we had a conversation with her, and hey Tara, hey.
Hey girl,
we were talking about, I think I said I wasn't, okay, the thing is about The Little Life is there's lots of people on YouTube that have like vlogs of them reading it, and more often than not, people are crying in those vlogs. Now, I said I didn't cry when I read A Little Life because it's not the type of book that would move me to cry in that way.
You just made you throw up instead.
It made me throw up instead. But it's because we think I had a suspected case of COVID. So when I got to some very graphic scenes, it moved me in other ways.
Yeah.
Right? But that's not the kind of narrative that would move me to cry. I found that the Book of Fire was very poetic. I feel like the way in which the story was told, how it was told, was more moving, that it allowed me the space to cry. You don't get that with A Little Life. It's just constant shock and horror and awe, and so then you don't have that room to do that. There are moving things that happen in the book and dynamics and relationships that that can move you in other ways, but it didn't make me want to cry, but this did. More specifically, the scene where the old lady dies, you know, the one on the crate in the Book of Fire, they're in the sea, they feel like they've been in the sea for ages. So when the fire starts, Tasso's like, get down to the sea, like head to the sea, that's where you need to go. And then you lose him. Don't find where he is for a very long time. And so you sort of go through the motions of them trying to escape the fire that's quickly sort of like taking people as it trails like in its wake. And they get to the sea and it feels like they've been there for ages, and they spot this woman on a crate, and the lady on the crate is very chatty at the beginning, and as time goes on you start to lose her. And the little girl Hara, she makes friends with this woman and she's like, you're my best friend. And then obviously she dies, and it's I found it really sad. It did bring a tear to my eye to see her go, like the way she went.
And also, like, speaking of like morals and stuff again, the little girl's like, we have to take her with us.
Yeah.
We can't leave her here. Whereas the mum's like, well, she's going to, like, she's already dead, and like, we need to be safe because she's obviously a mother and she's trying to protect her kid. But the kid's like, we cannot leave her here on her own. She's my friend. Yeah. And like, oh God. No, Sam, I'm actually going to cry. Like, I'm due on my period, guys. I can't talk about sad things.
it was very moving. I was like, no. It was very moving. So what I really liked about the book was the structure of it. So at the beginning, it's broken into two. You've got chapters and then you've got the Book of Fire. And at the very beginning, she's like, it's too hard for her to talk about, as in, I'm just going to give you my story. So the only way I can sort of process this is by writing it as a book, like its own separate thing. It almost as if it didn't happen to her. Do you know what I mean? And so we learn about the events of the fire through the Book of Fire, where she talks about, it's once upon a time there was a woman and a daughter. And she talks about it in that way, as if it's like distant from her, as opposed to something that happened to her. Mm. And then I marked this page, right? Page 65. And she says, there's something about stories that allows us to process the present. We listen to tales of tribulations overcome so that we might imagine we can survive ours. Children listen to the same fairy tale time and time again because there's a puzzle in their hearts that they unknowingly need to solve. And I was thinking, because Irene in the book, this is the woman's name, by the way, because I feel like I've been the woman and I've forgotten her name. She very much tells her story through stories, even if she's talking about something in the present when she's like in the cafe and she thinks back to a time where she was in London, because she grew up in London and she used to go to Cyprus to visit family, and that's how she met Tasso and whatever, because he was a family friend. And even her stories have stories, and that's how she processes things. And I found that really interesting. And I say that all to say, like, you know, there's been lots of debate this year around, not debate, but discussion. You know, when the Little Mermaid film came out and they changed it a little bit so it wasn't like Ariel losing her voice for a man, even though that's not what the Little Mermaid is about. Fight with me in the comments. We can discuss this at a different time. I think there's like a video clip of like Keira Knightley saying she would never show her daughter the Little Mermaid for that reason, because it's deeply sexist or blah, blah, blah. Again, it's not what The Little Mermaid is about. I'm talking about the Disney remake, 1993. I'm not talking about the actual original tale. But I say that all to say, I was, another tangent, but kind of, it's related. I was watching a YouTube video the other day of a lady who tells her story about being surviving her honour killing, and then also then surviving domestic violence in her adult life. It's on Lab Bible's channel. That's deeply moving. It's a strong woman to have gone through everything that she has and be able to go out on TED Talks and help other women get through this kind of stuff. She was talking about how when she was younger and she was being abused by her family and stuff, it was those fairy tales, those books, those stories that kept her going, that allowed her to process the things that were happening in her present. And so I feel like, regardless of whether you agree or not agree with a story, you shouldn't dismiss things just because it doesn't necessarily, like, to be so dismissive of The Little Mermaid because your perception is that she lost her voice for a man, right? And that women shouldn't, like, subscribe to fairy tale endings. Maybe your perspective, but that helped somebody get through something that they were going through in that present. So I don't think people should be as dismissive because of those things, because those stories help people in a way as well. And I think people forget that, as it's you know, it's dimensional. There's more sides to it than just being like, oh, this is what it's about. Well, what you think is about and you think is bad probably helps somebody in a different life going through a different thing. That's where I was going with that. But it really uses stories in this book to help her process things, the stuff that's going on around her. And I just thought that was really sort of powerful, because then that's the structure of the book supports that.
Yeah. I think the only thing I'd say about that is, like, I agree, I like the structure and I like the way it happened, but it felt a little bit just like a plot device, like a structure device. Like,
yeah.
At the end, I was a bit like, oh, it's the end of the Book of Fire at the end of the book. I don't know. Like, I agree that I liked the structure, but I don't think she necessarily needed to be, like, writing a book. I think it could have been structured like that.
Would you say it's probably a bit heavy-handed? It wasn't done very sophisticatedly. I'd give you that.
Yeah, like, I almost felt like, it almost felt to me like the editors have gone, well, why have you got two narratives? You need, like, a reason for there to be another narrative. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But maybe not. Like, I did really like the structure, but that's the only thing I would say about it. For me, anyway.
The only other thing I wanted to address was that the character in the story grew up in Walthamstow, which is the area of London I live in. Adjacent. I'm really trying not to blow up my spot.
No, you're not. It's all good. A lot of people live in a lot of places in Walthamstow, you know?
Yeah. Well, she mentions that she grew up in Walthamstow by the dog stadium where Charlie Chan's was. That is true. There was a Charlie Chan's nightclub in Walthamstow underneath the dog stadium. But technically the dog stadium is in Chingford. It has a Chingford postcode. So although it's called Walthamstow Dogs, it doesn't sit in... You would have seen it actually come into my house.
Yeah, I know. You pointed out to me we're on the bus somewhere and you were like, giving me the sights.
There we go. It's
my little tour guide. My little Walthamstow tour guide.
The other thing to say is that the Victoria line does not pass there.
No.
So you could not be there at Walthamstow Dogs / Charlie Chan's, where I had my prom after we finished school.
Did you?
We did. We did. You could not do that and have the Victoria Lumman pass you. It's just no. There's not even a
factually incorrect.
Factually, that's not right.
I had my prom at the Kassam Stadium, which is where Oxford United play football.
See, sporting arenas. It's no longer a dog stadium. It's no longer a dog stadium, guys. People live there now. They probably all have Chingford postcodes. We won't get into that because, you know, whatever. But it wasn't. Well, no, because people might have a way or a feeling about dog racing. No. I'm just not going to go into that right now.
Yeah, no, let's not.
But what I will say is that when it was there, because she talks about all these, like, people being there, like the East London gangsters and this and next and that. Because I think Brad Pitt went there or something like that.
Really?
Yeah, like celebrities used to go there, like big Hollywood actors and stuff, apparently. But I would say it was a pillar of the community, and the community was very sad when so it stayed in the family for years until the 2010s, and then the children didn't want to keep it.
Yeah.
And they tried very hard to sell it to someone that would keep it as a dog stadium, but it didn't happen. And now it's housing. So.
But it's still at the front. That's what's really interesting. Still,
yeah. They can't do anything to it because it's protected. So it's like 1920s deco. So art deco. So they
imagine if you lived there and you had to walk through the stadium every day. Well, the front of the stadium. And they're like, oh no, just my flat.
So I would have personally liked to have seen it stay as some sort of place where the community could go to, even if it was like some sort of like leisure spot.
That would have been good, wasn't it? Even if they turned some of it into flats, like, it's a big space that they could have like split it. They could have done a few flats and like, I don't know, a few sporting things. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Not that I'm a town planner. I don't really know how these things work, but I'm sure there was a better solution for whatever.
Surely. Because like, so where the dog stadium is, there's a school behind it. I used to go to that school. People can do some Googling if they want. And then you would hear them do the announcements on like race days.
Oh, really?
So you could hear them like when they were doing stuff, like before the race day, you could hear the announcements because it was literally just right there. That's why we had our like our prom in the nightclub, because it was just there.
Because it was right there.
Because it was right there.
Yeah, my school was nowhere near Kasam Stadium, like nowhere near. It's like a 25-minute drive.
Literally, I could walk to my prom. We got a limo to take me like on a 10-minute walk to my prom.
You got a limo?
We got a limo.
That's funny. I got in my mum's car and she put ribbons on it.
Oh, bless.
Yeah, it was cute. And then it made my brother come with us. He didn't want to. But he was like, well, I need to get there. He made my mum drop him off. I'm sure he made my mum drop him off. Anyway, that's the story for another time.
Oh my God, proms. Did people see? Oh my God, you know who I saw go on their prom on TikTok the other day, actually? I got down a rabbit hole, but Katie Price's kid, the girl.
Oh my God. Princess Andre. It's so beautiful. Can I just say?
Stunning.
Mm. Really, I worry girl. For her.
Why?
She's so famous, so young.
Yeah.
You know? But not in like a, she's not like a child actor or anything. She's just famous because her parents are famous, you know?
Like the Beckham's kids.
Yeah, and I worry about that. Because her mum gets a lot of shit from the media. And I just worry about what she's been exposed to, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, Peter Andre's still in the media as well, isn't he? So you'd hope that between the two of them, there's some sort of balance. Because I didn't realise that Junior had a song, and I was like, this is decent.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I don't know how I ended up in this space of TikTok, but I was there, and I was watching their videos, and I was like, I'm here for this song. And she had this really cool, she looked really cool going to her prom, because I tell you, I did not look cool going to my prom.
No, me neither. Oh my God, I wore this awful dress.
Kids these days are sophisticated.
Yeah, what the hell is that all about?
Social media, that's what that's about.
Yeah, I suppose. But I had social, well, no, it was Facebook, wasn't it?
It's not the same, is it?
Like Bebo.
Wasn't Instagram.
You know what the most brutal thing that happened to me?
Mm.
Like, literally ever. A girl that I was friends with at school, she was my other half on Bebo, and she removed herself from my other half. Shared, and then wrote a post on my wall, or whatever it was called, sharing the love, but she said, friendship over. But she said her love still with me that day.
Savage.
That's the kind of social media that we grew up, well, I grew up with anyway. So, Bebo skins were the shit, though. Bring them back. They were
See, I was MySpacing.
I used to have MySpace as well.
I used to love that, because you know what? It taught kids to code.
I was going to say, we were little HTML coders in our bedrooms, like, ooh.
Okay, I was like, I want my profile to look this way. I get like a basic outline, but then I'd be like, I want to change the colours. I want to have this song. I want these things to do these things. And then Facebook just made us dumb again.
Yeah, it was so cool how much you could personalise your profile.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God, it was so cool.
Mark Zuckerberg for making us stupid.
I'm pretty sure my MySpace picture with me with like a full blown like emo fringe.
Oh my god.
Like those like black and white glove things, doing like a peace sign and pouting.
Oh my god, I bet you did.
How embarrassing.
Oh my god. Oh my god. I don't know what my MySpace would look like now if I could see it. I don't think I do want to.
Yeah, I don't know. Bebo was brutal though. Bebo was like a cesspit for bullying. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, I never really had a Bebo. I mean, Bebos were around, I never had one. I was one of those kids, I'd say. So when everyone had I had a MySpace and I had like MSN Messenger. Oh my god, it's really dating me. But like
MSN, you sign in and out when your crush comes online so they get a notification.
I used to do that to Dean all the time. Oh, what a life.
I can't say the name of my crush, it's just so embarrassing, but I used to do it all the time and I used to mention like, hey.
I don't mind because, well, unless he's like completely different wild person now. I've not seen him for years, but like, oh my god, I was like totally upset. Like, we were each other's crush, so it worked out. But like,
mine was not reciprocated. However, I did kiss him one New Year.
Yeah,
when I was in like sixth form or something. So I conquered my quest. And then we never spoke ever again.
And then you never spoke again. Like, mine was filled with drama, but I can tell you about that offline. Okay. What a life.
We've gone fully off
away
tangent.
From this book. It's a great book.
You know what? That's fine because, you know, we talked about the book. We were good today. We didn't go off too many tangents to start with. So you've got a little bit of rambling, then book chat, and then rambling afterwards. Is that what you prefer, guys? Because I think that's what we should do.
Because we were gonna. I'm not even gonna go into it. We're gonna go into more book stuff. What are you reading?
Oh my god, I'm reading Beth O'Leary's book. Sorry, what's it called? The Wake Up Call. And I'm also reading The Seven Moons of. What's
Malia Almeida, something like that.
That's it, yeah. I'm also reading that. Both hardbacks, which is... Yeah.
See, I've got the paperback of The Seven Moons, and I'm very happy about it.
Yeah, you little shit. Well, I bought mine on sale when it was a hardback. Grr.
Is it expensive, the hardback?
No, I actually... So that's my train book, and then Beth O'Leary is huge, so that's at home. But I have to say, guys, it's not giving Beth O'Leary. Hear me out, right? I love Beth O'Leary with all my heart. What a legend. Flatshare, great book. The Switch, another great book. Road Trip, what's the date one called? That we went to the, oh my god, what's
the No
called?
Show.
The No Show, great book, right?
Yeah,
they're
fantastic.
Like comforting reads, but well written and like all the rest of it. We've talked about them loads before. But this is giving like, it's more like Emily Henry vibes, you know, like less substance to it. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. I've only read 1.5 Emily Henry books. I didn't finish one because
like,
I couldn't.
Got their place, like, are comforting to read. Like, to be fair, she's building, like, the romance really well. But it is just a romance. Like, there's nothing really, like, oh, I don't know. It's just a bit average. But I am enjoying it. But I'm just a bit, I think because I love Beth O'Leary normally, I'm like,
Wouldn't hit the spot in the way that.
No. Don't get me wrong, enjoyable read, race through it. Still big Beth O'Leary fan, but I'd wait for the paperback if you're going to read it.
I shall do.
Yeah.
But The Book of Fire, I would pick that up as a hardback. I mean, I have. And do go pick it up as a hardback.
Yeah, go I read agree, it. Actually. I think it's worth reading in hardback. And it's everywhere at the moment. So, well, I don't know if I've just noticing it because we've read it and talked about it and stuff. But I have seen it around. Another one that oh my god, I didn't tell you about my book haul the other day, Ellie. Oh my god. So, you know, I got a voucher for my birthday. I spent the rest of it. And I bought Bel Canto by Anne Patchett. So, you know, the author of The Dutch House.
Yeah.
But it's classified as a modern classic, so I think it's like an earlier book. But it sounded really interesting from the blurb. I just picked it up because it was pretty, And then I realised it was by Ann Patchett. And then I was like, ooh. So I bought that. And actually, I haven't done that for ages. Just like gone to a bookshop, browsed, picked up a book that I thought looked pretty, read the back and was intrigued. Because I feel like at the moment, because we're so, like, I'm on book talk, I'm on Instagram. Like, I have recommendations coming out my ears. I'm in two book clubs. Like, I've got a list so long of books that people have told me to read. And I've got like 20 books on my bookshelf that I need to read that I don't really like go into bookshops unless, and like just browse. So it was so nice because I had the voucher. I was like, well, I want to browse. And then I also bought the Satsuma Complex by Bob Mortimer.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, because I've heard a lot about it. So I think it has the potential to be disappointing. But I was with Caroline and, you know, then when they do like buy one, get one half price.
Yeah.
We did that at Waterstones. So she bought a Ruth Jones book, Love Untold.
Well. Okay.
That's why I bought that one, because it was part of that and I've heard lots about it. So yes, yeah, so that's what I bought.
Oh, yeah. That's a treat.
So I'll let you know. Yeah, I know. It was so fun. I had the best
one. I want to read Tom Lake by Ann Patchett, but I don't want to read it in hardback.
Oh my god, the hardback is so beautiful. Have you seen it?
Yeah, but I don't want to.
No,
I know,
but it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Hmm?
What? I'm just going to wait for the hardback. There's some hardbacks where it's like it's so pretty. Like I bought Borloo's Honey and Spice in hardback because I really liked, like, the one side was her, the other side was him.
Mm.
But I then went and bought it in paperback to read the paperback instead.
I will keep
the hardback as like the book to keep.
Yeah.
And then I probably will then give the paperback to someone else to read, like pass on the love.
Wow. You know, oh my God.
You've made a fool of death with your beauty.
Thank you. Yeah. I was like, brain function, please. I think the hardback of that is way nicer than the paperback.
Agreed.
So
I'm glad I have that as a hardback, and it's not offensive. If I can remember correctly, it's not an offensive hardback.
No, it's not. It's not quite as inoffensive as our friend Caleb Azuma Nelson, but
oh god, perfect size. I love the themes of his. You know how authors have a theme to their titles, their covers.
Mm.
Love his. I still haven't read Small Worlds. I'm sorry.
Oh my god, you should.
I'm gonna hit Seven Moons.
Oh yeah, because you're doing it.
I need to, and then I've got Meg Nolan's Ordinary Human Failings, even to read.
Oh yeah,
and that is a hardback, but it's inoffensive.
No, because Ellie goes, I went to Pages of Hackney. I want to take you there, blah blah blah. And I bought this book, and she shows me a picture, and I'm looking at it, and I'm inspecting it. I'm inspecting the picture, and I'm like, that is a hardback, Eleanor. And she's like, I know,
but it's not. It's 215 pages, and it's Caleb size. So
he set the standard. Okay?
He set the standard
if
in hardbacks.
Can do it, you can do it. Okay.
Yes, guys. It has to be just like not big.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, one book I am going to buy in hardback. Guess.
Dolly. Yeah. I was going to say Dolly Parton. I will. You knew what I meant, but.
I've actually got all of her books in hardback, just by chance.
Hers aren't offensive, though.
No.
That's my limit.
Have you got Everything I Know About Love, or do I have that back?
No,
back?
I don't have it.
No, it must be at home. I've got a back catalogue at my parents' house. One day they're going to be like, you need to take these books, and I'm going to be like, yeah.
I do have
about
like
that.
They need to stay at your house. I do have of yours that I actually been meaning to read. I'm gonna basically this book is like my goal on Amazon. So you know, Goodreads. So this book is my goal on Goodreads. I'm done it now. I set mine purposely low because last year I didn't make it, but then last year was a shit year. personally, so I didn't have the chance to read that. But this year, I've like smashed through it. So now that I've done that, I like go, okay, well, I'll now read other things. Like, I'll be like, okay, I'm going to read The Heart. I'm going to read like a page that's like a book that's 700 pages because I've got the space to do it.
Yeah.
Because I've met my goal.
What do you have the 700 pages to read?
I don't, but but just in case I did, the closest thing I've got to that is Great Circle, maybe.
Oh yeah, I've got that now. I saw it on, you know, one of those like free book exchange things. I need to put a book back because I haven't done that.
The Ruth Ozeki one as well. How many pages is that?
That's big. Long. To be fair, that would be a good episode.
Oh, I want to read that. I'll give it a go.
Oh, my sirens are going again. That means it's time for the end of the episode.
Guys, it's been great.
It's like 8 p.m. on a Wednesday night. Something's kicking off again.
Another day in London.
No. No, I'm sure it's fine. I actually just live, as we said last time, I live fairly near a hospital. So they just, not like super near it, but they go down the road near me.
Oh. God, I just had like flashbacks of us making siren sounds.
No, we actually, this is it, we're done. Okay, that is our time to go.
Okay guys, we're gonna leave a question. If you're listening on Spotify, you're gonna leave a question. Please interact with us, we want to hear what you've got to say.
Yeah, and also just give us a little bit of kudos for being consistent queens. Thank you very much.
Consistent queens that we are. Look at us. We're going to do this until the end of the year. You better guess. You better know. You're going to know. I mean, you could already guess. What am I trying to say? That the next book will be The Seven Moons because we both would have read it.
Yeah, we're both reading it. Yeah. If we both finish it.
I'm a little bit worried about that. But yeah, I've got the whole day off on Monday. So
have you?
Yes, because I thought my mental health.
Ah. God, I miss working for a big company.
Yeah.
Anyway. yeah. Well, I don't have the day off for Monday. But, you know, your gal will be fine. I've actually got a really busy weekend as well, so I'm going to go now. I'm going to go finish Beth O'Leary now, and then I can dedicate all my attention to The Seven Moons.
Sick.
Okay. All right. Well, have a nice evening.
And you have a lovely day, evening, morning, afternoon, wherever you are in the world.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Oh my God, yeah. We need to text them.
Okay, yeah, right. Let's end the recorder.
Good night.
Oh, it's me that needs to do it. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay.
Bye.
And that's the app. If you like the episode, please leave us a lovely review, subscribe and share with your friends, and we'll love you forever. Follow us on socials at We Are Bookish Pod. Thanks for listening.